I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, Chase Thomas podcast, late on a Tuesday evening. Coming to us live from where the Knicks ran Barclays Center tonight in a brutal, brutal ending where Tom Thibodeau said, quote, "I'm pissed," after the Knicks lost by two. But old friend David Birchberger of SMY is here to tell us what it was like inside Brooklyn, where the Knicks fans, like Verts, outnumbered the Nets fans by a lot. James Harden acknowledged it. What was it like in the building, Bert? What did you make of the game itself and just the environment?
What's going on, Chase? It was a great game, great environment. Per usual, Knicks fans really came out to sort of try and outshine the Nets fans in their home arena. Barclays is pretty touristy. You get a lot of sort of middle of the road, not too interested, street clothes, no Knicks or Nets gear on them, type of fan. So there's a lot of that, but the fans, you know, really rooting for their team, obviously made a lot of noise, and Nets fans were particularly loud and happy come the end of the game, after Knicks fans spent 48 minutes being loud and obnoxious, ultimately to lose by two. It was a great basketball game, back and forth, game of runs. The Knicks trying out their new starting lineup with Alec Burks in for Kemba Walker. The Nets getting everything they needed from their big three, Durant, Harden, the officiating. So came down to the wire, and the Nets got the edge.
Was the officiating that bad? In full transparency, I've not watched it from tonight. So what was egregious in your estimation? Why do you feel slighted by the officiating?
I'm sure my unemotional self tomorrow will look back and be like, all right, it was bad both ways. Mm-hmm. But Thibs and Randall do have some beef with Randall's lack of free throws, and apparently an official gave Randall the explanation that, well, you're so much bigger and stronger than everybody, then this contact, you know, it doesn't really affect you like other players, so we're not going to give you these calls. And Randall didn't like that explanation for good reason, especially given the calls Harden was getting early on in the game. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of these phantom calls and a lot of these really calls that were written out with the new rules. But I feel like they sort of heard the backlash from the Hardens and the Trae Youngs and are starting to give
them
a couple.
Whoa, leave Trae out of this. leave Trae out of this. He did nothing wrong.
Well, I don't know what happened. You got to tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like, you know, a lot of these guys were complaining about the new officiating rules. And then, you know, I watched some Hawks games, I watched some Nets games, and it's like, oh, wait, Harden and Trae, they're getting some of these calls all of a sudden. Even Randall is starting to get some of the calls he was getting last year. So So I wonder if the officials have softened up on these new rules a bit, trying to find a happy medium.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't really noticed it that much of an uptick. I mean, Trey's played well, and I think he's actually kind of figured it out outside of the early season calls that he wasn't getting. Like, I don't think it's really messed with him all that much. He's just a supremely smart, talented player that he's just kind of figured it out. But also, Trae Young absorbing contact at the rim is going to be different than the way Randall absorbs contact at the rim. This is something that LeBron always got frustrated with, right? Like, him just being a freight train in his prime, like, he would not get some calls where it's just like, well, it just looks brutal because you're basically a linebacker going inside, and like, your body can handle and withstand a lot of those hits. And like, not to equate my own basketball experience with LeBron James, but I think it's more than fair to make this comparison at this present time. And I'm not saying I was the LeBron of AAU in Georgia growing up, but people are saying no. So I, as someone who was not the biggest basketball player growing up on my AAU team, I got hit, and when I would get hit, I was taught to flail. And I was a flopper. I was a flopper, Burtz. And I remember I would just get hit, and it would look so much worse if a dude hit me versus like a Terrell on my team, who it just didn't look as bad when he would get fouled. So Randall, just being completely jacked, looks different than when myself or Trae Young get fouled. It's just that I think that's always going to be a thing, though, and something that's always going to frustrate guys like him.
I think this was the crux of sort of Shaquille O'Neal's issue with the officiating back in his prime, too.
Yeah.
You know, when you're that athletically dominant over guys, you get officiated differently. And I thought it was a problem last year with Randall, but this year, especially.
I thought it was more the shot selection in the. Or, like, I just thought that it would have been nice for him to hit three shots in the Hawks series. Four?
All right.
Two?
We don't have to bring up that series every time we're on the pod. All right, Chase, you really want a depressed podcast guest I don't think that's good for numbers.
That's true. I don't know what the difference is between the two. So how did the game go? Did it go about what you expected? How did Harden and KD look? No Joe Harris for the Nets right now. Blake Griffin out of the rotation. Like, the two New York teams, big news. Kemba out of the rotation. We'll get to some Kemba stuff in a second, but Kemba's out of the rotation. Blake's out of the rotation in Brooklyn. First, with the team that you follow and know intensely, the New York Knicks, with Kemba, him getting pulled out. Thibodeau's explanation was that, like, he's a starter, and he didn't want to do three guards, undersized guards, that sort of thing. And he was just like, it just didn't make sense with our rotation, so we're pulling him out. Do you buy that? Do you buy that it really did bother him? Was it like Kemba just, is he cooked? Is it over? For the people that have not watched enough Knicks to, like the people who are on NBA Twitter right now that are like, Kemba's out of the rotation, let's go trade for him. Is he someone that any team that is looking for any type of consistent spark, is that someone that they should look at? Or like, what happened here? Where is Kemba Walker right now?
I am writing for SNY a little Kemba trade market sort of analysis piece, and there's not a lot of great fits. I actually like Dallas, of all places. The Knicks and Dallas can get together on their first trade since the Porzingis blockbuster, I actually think that would be interesting. The reality with Kemba is this. Look, he's lost a step offensively, really everywhere. But that's no surprise to anybody, right? He's a little older. He's had some injuries. That lack of bursts has held him back offensively a bit. It's helped that he's shot really well from deep, 41%. Can't be mad about that. He's been doing it off pick and roll. The playmaking's been okay. So call it, let's say Kemba's, you know, 50-60% of what he is offensively, something like that, right? The problem is really on the other end, where he's not giving anything to the Knicks, and he's really breaking a lot of what made the Knicks defense work last year. A lot's been written about it, especially by Fred Katz over at The Athletic. He mentioned this as well. Knicks like to switch some of their perimeter guys, you know, on a lot of those high pick and rolls and stuff like that. And Kemba just makes switching impossible. He makes a lot of the transition defense stuff, because they don't want to cross match. His help, you know, he tries defensively, he scampers over, he draws charges, but you know, when he gets in the guy's face at the end of the day for a contest, man, any shooter over like 6'2" just doesn't see him. It's just like he's not there. And when it comes to replacing him, you know, he was just the best option to replace him, the starting five that made the most sense. And it was sort of, it seemed like it was a decision between replacing him with one of the point guards, like Rose or Quickley, or replacing him with Burks. You leave Rose and Quickley on the bench, you keep that sort of insane bench unit with that backcourt and Obi Toppin, who fits well with that backcourt. And I think Burks is just a nice fit in the starting lineup as a guy that can do stuff with the ball, do stuff without the ball. He gives you size. He gives you pretty decent perimeter defense. And so it looks good tonight. And Burks put up 25, 5, and 5. Whenever Burks gets a real opportunity on the Knicks, he's suddenly like an insanely good player. He played 39 minutes tonight, which is also nuts. The Knicks played great basketball. The Nets had Kevin Durant and James Harden. I think that'd be the best way to sort of recap this game. And Harden, one of the few games this season where he's looked fully like himself, 34, 10, and 8, 3 steals. He had a putback dunk, which is not something you see.
I don't think I've ever seen a Harden putback dunk.
I think he was even quoted saying he wasn't sure he's had one in the league. So, he was pretty excited off that one. But, you know, every time these two teams get together, it's a fun game. So I'm just happy the Knicks competed and they had a real chance there. Fournier makes a half-court shot at the buzzer. The Knicks win, but rimmed out.
Well, you're 11-10. You're tied with the Hawks. The East is jumbled. The West is jumbled. I feel like half the league right now is 500. I feel like it is outside of the Warriors and the Suns, and I guess the Nets a little bit.
They own all the wins.
Yes, it's them. They own everything. It's wild. But I will say, because I'm doing a team a week, so I just watch all of those games for a team a week just to get a good feel and differentiate it. Shout out to Carlin Gay for putting that on me, because it's what he was doing. I was like, you know what, that makes sense. Instead of just trying to see a roundabout way of a lot of different teams on League Pass, I just pick one the week along with the Hawks. But the Spurs are my team this week, and I was going through their stuff and the Wizards game, and they're 1-10 in the West. They're 6-13 overall. They're 1-10 in the West. The Spurs, as someone who's watched, like, it's bad. And I was thinking about, like, oh, would Kemba fit there? Because they, like, I don't know if you've ever watched a DeJounte Murray shot or a Derek White shot when both of those guys are not on. But let me tell you, Verts, it's rough. The amount of mid-range shots that they're pulling up with, that DeJounte Murray shoots, like, he shoots like Sean Marion to me. Like, that's how the shot looks. It's something I wrote down where I was like, this still doesn't look good. The numbers aren't putrid from three, but it's just everything looks clunky. Their half court stuff sucks. They don't have anyone who really wants to score, but their defense is so annoying. Like, Trey Jones is a great player to watch. I very much enjoy watching him on D, and Keldon Johnson's a lot of fun, but there's a ceiling there. I don't know. I watch them, and then I think about the Knicks a little bit, where it's like the young guys who I kind of like DeJounte Murray. I kind of like Keldon Johnson. I kind of like Lonnie Walker still. Knicks kind of have a lot of those dudes where it's like, do we kind of like Emmanuel Quickley? Do we kind of, like, how much do we like RJ Barrett? Do you like RJ? Like, do you like RJ more than Keldon Johnson at this point? I don't know. There are some similarities between how they're both these teams are made to me, but I don't know. Is that fair at all?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's also a problem of, you look at both those teams, like, all right, which young guy are we throwing the money at and riding, you know, through this rebuild or for the next few years? And, like, who do you feel safe giving a big, you know, Bridges-esque extension to? Did Knicks feel that way with RJ Barrett? He hasn't had a good year thus far. He had an amazing 5-game stretch. He was averaging over 20 points per game. He was defending really well, but now it hasn't looked so good. Now with the Spurs, you know, again, like, you like all these young guys, but can you say we're going to build around DeJounte Murray?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bit of a stretch. There's definitely a lot to like there and a lot of guys that can end up being, you know, great value deals, great role players, especially like Devin Vassell. You know, he's awesome as well. I feel like the difference between the Spurs and the Knicks is not only conference, but, you know, maybe a couple more veterans that the Knicks can rely on. And then, you know, obviously, even the Spurs, I don't think, have someone of Julius Randle's caliber. And Randle was just sort of that guy that, and the Knicks live or die with Randle, and he was a big part of last year, and he's going to be a big part of this year. So, you know, the Spurs are definitely missing some pieces. They haven't really surprised me in any way. I feel like people sort of thought the offense would struggle and the defense would be solid. And, you know, they're beating up on some of the worst teams, but, you know, having trouble really getting the wins they need to compete for a play-in or anything like that. It'd be rough to see Pop go out on this team, you know? It'd be kind of cool to see him go out on top.
That's not happening. That ship sailed a long time ago. I think that ship sailed with the Kawhi trade. Like, that's when he probably should have retired. I guess he's gonna, like, there were some awards and records he was chasing, but like that was it. Like, the package they got for Kawhi, that was it. And I mean, even in hindsight, like, I think most of us thought this was gonna be a disaster, and the DeRozan Aldridge era did not lead to anything for the Spurs, unfortunately. But DeRozan's playing great basketball in Chicago now, so good for him. The wall for Kemba thing, do you buy any of that?
Yeah, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because I saw one headline and immediately dismissed it because I don't understand how the money works, and I didn't read it all into it. But now you're asking me about it. Is this a thing? Are people talking about it? How does the money work?
I don't know either. But like,
because for those that don't know, Kemba got bought out. He's not making his $36 million
right
anymore.
If he was making that, it's okay. Right. Like, if that was the case, then it's an easy one. But like, he's not making that. So yeah, I have no idea how that works. Because I don't think New York really has anybody else that they could throw. Like, Randall's your highest paid player, and then you're not throwing Derrick Rose in that or anything. So
right, you're gonna bundle Burks and Rose and
Fournier
and Todd, like, for all the Fournier to like get match the salaries to get
John Wall.
I don't think so. Listen, if it were a 1-for-1 swap somehow, I see the argument for Wall, right? He's not Kemba. He'll defend better than Kemba. He's got more size than Kemba. His playmaking might be a little better. I don't watch him too much last year, but I thought he looked like he had more of a step and more of some of his old self than I expected. I think he should be playing right now. It's a little weird that he's not playing at all, especially since the Rockets can't win anything.
Well, the report is that he didn't want to come off the bench, and that the Rockets wanted to bring him off the bench, and he doesn't want to play if he's coming off the bench, which... I mean,
well, that won't work in New York, because look at Kemba's situation right now.
I don't know. The John Wall one's weird, because a lot of people are like, it's a bad look for the league. They should fine him. But it's such a weird thing, because you can't legislate rotations. You can't fine people for not, like, for the Nets just being like, you're washed, Blake Griffin. Like, it's not working anymore. And it will put you back in the rotation if injuries mount up, and we have to put you back in. Kemba, you'll be back in the rotation if injuries pop up and we have to reinsert you. But like, we're not going to fine teams for sitting veterans, because it's just that, like, you can't dictate rotation. So it's like, if they're suiting up and dressing and going to practice and all that kind of stuff, but they're just not playing and they're just put on ice, like, it sucks. For the league, it's not great. It's not a great look, but I don't know how you legislate that out of the game, out of just what we're looking at here, right?
I agree. That makes sense. Do you want to hear my Kemba trade?
Okay, I'm ready. Don't say Atlanta.
Kemba Walker. I mentioned the Mavericks. Kemba Walker for the return of Reggie Bullock and Frank Ntilikina. get the old crew back. Get the Mavs their fake, you know, ball handling scoring point guard to take some pressure off Luka. I think it works out tremendously.
Do you know what my version of this is?
Okay.
I don't know if the money works, but this will be close. It would be close
here.
I do Rondo and Kendrick Nunn for Kemba Walker. I want Kemba Walker in the Lakers. Just throw him on the Lakers. Keep getting older. Talen Horton Tucker actually makes 9.5.
I was looking at the Lakers crew and seeing if there was any trade there. I don't know. K-
The thing when we do the Kemba stuff, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, he's a third guard. Like, it's just like fantasizing about trading for Dellen Wright at this point. Like, what are we doing? Like, he does not change anything for anybody. Like, he is just someone who is just depth at this point. Maybe he can swing a series off the bench for a contender, a la Lou Williams, potentially, like, maybe. But, like, the days of starter, high-paid, max player Kemba, I think, are long gone, right?
That's fair to say. And you know, it has only been 20 games. And he really, again, like, he hasn't looked awful in these games. He's looked like a bad fit for the Knicks. And the defense could use, you know, the defense is what it is when you're working with Kemba. But I think on another team, he can still contribute. Like you said, especially in a bench role, I think he's still got some game left.
Outside of the Knicks, who have you been watching a lot of lately?
The Sacramento Kings.
I watched them 2 weeks ago a lot. Yeah, they're weird, but they're okay.
They're in an interesting little spot here because you know, they had the firing of Luke Walton, obviously. That was the big story recently. So I feel like a lot of these teams with the midseason firing, they get a new coach bump. You know, so the Kings can sort of ride that into maybe some momentum. You know, they're not out of the race for the play-in. They're not too far back behind 500. So, you know, they beat the Lakers in that crazy overtime thriller. I think they're up right now, but I'd have to check while we're recording this. I think under Gentry, they have a chance to figure some stuff out, and they have talent. They have chemistry there. I think the team's really interesting. Every NBA nerd loves Rashawn Holmes. I love Rashawn Holmes.
He's great, man. But Rashawn Holmes has this shot at the rim that is just mesmerizing. He's kind of but it's that, and then like there's two bigs right now in the NBA that I'm just mesmerized by, and it's him and it's Gafford. Gafford dunks everything. Like that dude, it pulverizes people down low. He has some like Dwight Howard in him. It's bizarre to watch a Wizards game with him, but he just bullies people inside. He was going after Jakob Poeltl last night, and dude's just not afraid. That man just gets beat up. He's jacked, and he just I don't know. He's a delight to watch. Like he and Rashawn Holmes they're very effective as they're just as fives in today's NBA. They're both very different, but they make it work for very different ways.
Yeah, I remember watching Gafford in Chicago and not understanding why he wasn't getting more playing time or why other teams didn't want to jump on him. So I feel pretty vindicated now that he's doing well in Washington. But yeah, Holmes is awesome. Fox to this point hasn't played super well, and the Kings, you know, they haven't played themselves out of play-in contention. So if he turns it around as well, suddenly you have maybe a decent team.
Well, let me ask you this: when you've watched them, what do you think of their half court situation? Because they let, I forgot who I was watching them play last. I'm trying to remember who that was. But either way, it'll come to me in a second. But it was the Pistons. They let them come back. The Pistons' third unit was in there. They had like four guards. Frank Jackson was going off a little bit late, but like their half court stuff is ugly. Like when they have De'Aaron Fox and their group in there, like De'Aaron Fox takes a lot of dumb mid range shots. He's so good in transition. He's so fast. That stuff works. Halliburton is there. He should be their closer, and he has the sidestep three that's great. Like he's the most fluid. His footwork is phenomenal. I love watching Halliburton. He's my favorite King to watch. Bagley's atrocious. I don't know if that's still salvageable at this point, but the stuff I watched was just very not good. Thompson's good for them. Davion Mitchell is the, like, watching him off ball is incredible. Say that again?
Yeah. No, his nickname, Off Night.
Oh, is that what his nickname is? That's funny. But yeah, I don't know. I don't think, like, it's interesting that you're high on them. But they don't have a lot of depth. Like, Metu is playing a lot for them.
I didn't say I'm high. I'm watching them.
Uh-huh.
And I'm intrigued. I wouldn't go as far to say I'm high on them, but I'm intrigued. They're a team I'm intrigued by.
Well, like, the lineup of Fox, Heald, Barnes, Holmes, and Halliburton should be good. And it's fine, but it's not blowing teams out of the water. I just think that they have six or seven guys that they should just be playing a bunch. But I don't know. Heald does not need much space. Like, he would be such an annoying player to defend because that dude is so good off pick and roll, catch and shoot stuff. or he'll just get a pin down and he'll like, I just don't know how he gets the space he does to have it. His release is so pretty, but he just does not need much time and much space at all to get these threes off. And I don't know, he's a lot of fun to watch too, and it's just kind of a shame that he did not go to the Lakers, because if they had ended up with the Buddy Hield trade versus the Westbrook trade, man, I don't know, I think we would all feel a lot better about the Lakers, right?
Yeah, that trade in hindsight now.
Just no, hold on. Not yeah. Hindsight. I said on this very podcast, it was a disaster. I said that they weren't going to be a top four seed. I said the Lakers would be fighting for a play-in, and that last year was not an admiration. I feel vindicated about my Lakers cynicism. People are putting them in the finals before this year. I never got it. It's over. I don't think LeBron James, this is maybe the biggest take of all, he's not a Laker next year.
Oh, boy.
He's a Phoenix Sun.
Whoa.
He's a Phoenix Sun.
What?
Just go ahead and put it out there. LeBron James is a Phoenix Sun next year. James Jones running things in Phoenix. I could see him getting in on the Phoenix ownership as he retires. It's not far from LA. You got Devin Booker there. You got his dude CP. I'm telling you, the Suns have won 97 games in a row. They just went to the finals. I could see it.
I'm turning down the Heat in my room from Frozen, just because that take coming through my ears, I'm sweating right now. It's unbelievable.
Is that a strong take?
That LeBron is going to leave the Lakers.
The Lakers have no choice. Yeah, they have no choice. Like, there's nothing else for him to do in LA. LA is screwed. They have no assets. This is it. Like, they're locked into this group. There's nothing left. The cupboard is dry. There is nothing left.
This group is shot. They're not going to figure this out.
Well, I mean, it's Melo is playing a significant role with this group. There is no young guy on this. Like, KCP is gone. Kuzma's gone. Lonzo, gone. All the young stuff that they could use, like, I just, there's nothing there anymore. It's Kendrick Nunn. It's Rajon Rondo. Malik Monk hasn't worked out. You got Dwight Howard.
Aaron Horton Tucker.
Yeah, that's it. And he has not been good for them this year.
Why am I on here defending the Lakers? I feel like
I don't know either. Trevor Ariza was a big part of them. Kent Bazemore started out, and they were like, "Oh yeah, this is not going to work." And now he's out of the rotation. Like, it's not good. They can't fix it. There's no young guys. It's all 1 year contracts. They're all off the books next year. They are locked into Westbrook for another year. They are locked into AD. They're locked into those three, and they don't have the money to get out of this. There is nothing else they can do. LeBron cannot take a big pay cut to get someone else in there. This is. They're screwed. I really do believe the Lakers are screwed. And I think LeBron is always thinking towards his next step. And I would not be surprised if LeBron is a Phoenix Sun after this season.
I won't go as far as to say the Lakers are screwed. I agree with you that the choice of going with Westbrook over the Buddy Hield trade, that wasn't a hindsight thing. I was saying just in hindsight, it looks even worse now.
Okay.
That
yeah.
choice, but. I think we've had this before. We're 20 games in. LeBron, you know, has a fundamentally new team around him, and you know, there are injuries at play, and things don't look so good, and the panic buttons hit. You know, I think they'll figure it out. I think they'll be pretty good. How good? I don't know. They're out of my contenders basket now, just because they're a mess right now. But I would not be surprised. I'd probably be more surprised if they stayed there than didn't come back into the contenders basket.
Mm.
I think they'll figure it out.
Okay.
I mean, people have talked about a bunch of different, you know, rotational decisions. I think at some point, the panic button is when they say, okay, AD, you're starting at the five. You're playing the five the whole time. Everyone's spaced out. LeBron, Russ, and AD are just going to get spacing around them, and they're just going to run it.
Who's spacing? Who are you throwing in for those last two spots?
They're doing this DeAndre Jordan crap. Mm-hmm. Melo, you throw in Melo. I like Monk.
Oh, God.
Monk's been playing well.
Oh, God.
Yeah, when I say these names, too, yeah, it doesn't come out.
Like, that's not getting out of the West. Like, the Warriors and the Suns are not worried about this.
Probably not right now, but we'll see.
I don't know. I think it's over. I think it's over. And I don't think LeBron's going to be okay with the current, like, 2 years back-to-back of early playoff exits, which I think the Lakers have no path out of. So we'll see.
Maybe he's going to Phoenix for that medical team over there, huh?
Do they still have that? I guess they still do, right?
Is that still a thing, like the medical staff that cures all old players, ailments over in Phoenix?
Yeah, maybe he goes to New York.
No, probably not.
What story, NBA story, has you most intrigued at the moment, Bert?
Let me know if this is a lame answer.
Okay.
This Suns Warriors race to be the best team in the league has me fascinated. And I'm sad they're playing tonight, and I already missed a good portion of it. I'll rewatch it tomorrow. Yeah, they're both amazing. I feel vindicated by both those teams. I was high on both of them. You know, just Golden State coming back with a very similar core and doing very Golden State things, and Steph Curry being unreal. Phoenix just bringing back their finals team from last year. It's really puzzling to me that no one was, I don't know, it's like Phoenix was not being talked about in this contenders conversation preseason, early season. And I'm like, guys, it's the same team. They're really good. And I know they weren't fluking last year. So what's going on? And now here they are just running over the league easily. And I think the big question between these two teams is, how's Klay going to look once he's back? And how seamlessly does he just work his way back into the Warriors core? And if the answer is, hey, Klay is like 80-90% of himself and he looks good and there's no hiccup in how they're playing, then the Warriors probably have the edge there. But I'll leave it up to you. I mean, what do you think?
I mean, they have a situation where it's not like Klay has to be rushed back. That's the cool thing. It's like Wiggins is playing out of his mind. And I don't know if this continues with Wiggins. I'm more concerned about Wiseman coming back. That is a bigger concern of me, because I'm just like, Kevon Looney's really good for them, and I hope they don't insert him into the starting rotation. I hope he is not like Bielitsa, Iguodala, Payton, Porter. Like, they have a lot of dudes. Like, Chiozza was playing a little bit, so those minutes are gone, thankfully. But I don't know. I don't think Klay has a lot that he's walking into. He'll be fine. Like, Klay is an adapter. He'll be okay. He doesn't need the ball in his hands. Catch and shoot, the defense, whatever. I'm more concerned about Steve Kerr getting James Wiseman involved. And like, hey, we got Wiseman here. We got to do something with him. So I'm more concerned about how he fits in with this group, because that means I think Looney takes a big hit here. I don't know what that means for Draymond at the five.
You think Curry's going to look at this winning and see Wiseman come back and say, hey, you know, we have to prioritize? Because I think I'm sure they'll bring Wiseman in off the bench just to start. And I think that'll sort of drive, like, if he's playing poorly, all right, be a little patient. He's coming off the bench. He hasn't played, whatever. But if it continues, I don't see why Kerr wouldn't just pull him from the rotation. I don't think he'd have any problem doing that when this team's clearly a contender and clearly trying to win. And I almost wonder, come the trade deadline, do they trade some of these young guys?
Well, I think they're going to be faced with a tough decision there. But these guys don't make any money. Like, that's the other thing. They're not trading any of the guys that make money. And because Andrew Wiggins is playing so well for them, that they're not going to move him either. So their four highest paid players are coincidentally, they're only players making over $10 million a year. So I don't really know what they can get. I don't really know. I think if they're active anywhere, it's the buyout market, right? Like, that's probably where they get involved. I don't think it's through trades, I think. But they don't have to do anything like that yet. And they're super deep. It's amazing. Do you remember how just thin the Warriors were everywhere just like a year and a half ago? And now, like, they're loaded. Like, there is so much veteran depth and young depth and just talent all across the board. They're like 14 deep, and it's amazing how quickly Bob Myers flipped this. So shout out to him for doing that, light years, if you will. The Sun stuff, though, Berts, I think part of the animosity towards them is just that, like, A, the West is tough, and betting on the Suns to go back-to-back in this brutal Western Conference is just hard. And I think people are just hedging against them being able to run the gauntlet like that in back-to-back years. Chris Paul being a year older, DeAndre Ayton not getting the max, so questions about like how he would be based on what happened with Sarver and talks breaking down, the whole Sarver stuff in general. They brought in Elfrid Payton, always worrisome, as you know, as a Knicks guy, you never want to bring. They paid Landry Shamet, weirdly enough. That was kind of a weird signing. But then Mikal Bridges became like the best defender in basketball. So that's been a big part of it too. And Devin Booker and Chris Paul haven't dropped off a bit. Ayton's still awesome. And they're rolling. And I, for one, am 1,000% here for a Devin Booker, Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Western Conference Finals. Man, I am here for that, sir.
That'd be insane. That'd be really fun to watch.
You know what's not fun to watch right now, Verts?
Hit me.
The Denver Nuggets playing 500 basketball. Mm. The season from hell. Dan Devine had a good piece in The Ringer about this and whether or not they should pack it in and just prioritize the long-term health of their team. They're dipping into the luxury tax, and they'll be in the repeaters tax soon, potentially, depending on what moves they make. This is an expensive team that I think might not make the playoffs this year. This is just catastrophic. Jokic now banged up. Murray not coming back till April. And now Michael Porter Jr. And this is what I really want to get your perspective on, Verts, because like they paid Michael Porter Jr. and they gave him the extension. And what we saw from him last year was great. What was it, 23 a night? And he was great in the playoffs for them, stepped up without Murray. You saw all the flashes there of what he could be as an offensive player, and he did enough on defense to earn Malone's trust. But like the back stuff was never going anywhere. And this was always just kind of like the Embiid stuff, where it's always going to be a ticking time bomb where you're hoping you can win it before things go kaboom. And unfortunately, this is now his third back surgery. And there was a good nugget in Devine's piece where he was like, he said, quote, injury analysis conducted by Jeff Stotts of In-Street Clothes revealed that nearly 3 out of every 4 NBA players to undergo disc-related surgery report additional back problems at some point during their career, with roughly 25% needing additional procedures down the line. The back stuff, it just doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. Like, he's going to have this, and it sucks because he really was turning a corner, but you saw him limping and he wasn't able to dunk late in that last game. It was rough to see. Like, he couldn't get up, and then, of course, he has back surgery right after. But, man, this is part of the problem of, like, taking this kind of big risk. There's a reason he fell to 14. Like, it's awesome. We all knew that, like, he would have been the number one pick in the draft if he didn't have the injury stuff. Like, he played 53 minutes at Mizzou because of this. Like, none of this is new. And this is like one of those risk versus reward thing, but this seems like to me now, because you've paid him and because the money's already given out and because you've invested so much into him, that like you just cost yourself a title maybe, because he's gone and you don't know how many years you're going to get of this window and how many years Kroenke is going to sign on to be in the luxury tax and to spend enough to get you into the NBA finals. This team was built to do it. And unfortunately, they rolled the dice with a guy who just had injury red flags everywhere, and it happened. I feel bad for Nuggets fans because this team, you can make the case, was the deepest. And if they're all healthy, and we saw what it looked like when the big four was healthy for a little bit of time last year, this was a championship team. Like, I think they probably would have beaten the Suns in a 7-game series if they were fully healthy last year. And it just seems like we're never going to get the four healthy at the same time, and the Denver Nuggets are going to be a tragic story. Am I jumping the gun a little bit?
Not necessarily, sadly. And the craziest thing, too, is you mentioned last year. I mean, Jamal Murray doesn't tear his ACL. Maybe we're talking about the Nuggets win it all, and who really cares what happens after that? You pull it off, all right, someone gets hurt, someone's not, whatever. You can retool, rebuild, you won your chip. Who cares, right? But now, suddenly, it looks like the window is well past them. You have to hope Murray comes back healthy this season, and now you don't even have MPJ that are waiting for him, and who knows how long he's out. You know, the injury stuff, you never know what intel these teams have. Obviously, taking him with that pick, I actually wanted the Knicks to take him in that draft. Taking him with that pick isn't so much the big risk-reward as the extension, and now you sort of have to live with that and less flexibility and hope that these guys can come together healthy. It's tough. It's a tough thing to swing, and it's tough to waste, you know, another year of having an MVP talent up front. Denver's good enough to still make noise this postseason, I think, and make the postseason and make noise in the postseason. I just think when you have Jokic and they have decent depth, the regular season becomes a little easier. The postseason is a big concern, right? If Murray's back and he's healthy, but then you don't have MPJ, that's obviously not as complete a roster as you had going into last year. So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm trying to find some silver linings to combat your downtrodden pessimism, but I don't have it.
But this, man, is why I'm trying to get out of the DeAndre Hunter market right now. I've been beating this drum for a year now. Get out of this. This is going to be a thing. DeAndre Hunter is an injury-prone player. Like, I am all about the availability factor, and I prioritize it so much that I'm just like, there are some dudes that are just injury-prone. Like, it's inescapable. And I think DeAndre Hunter is that. I think Michael Porter Jr. is that. I think there are just some guys, unfortunately, that fall in that category, and it just sucks. But, like, I don't know. I can't just roll the dice on a title for these guys. But also, like, he fell to them and they're already a team on the rise, like you said. So it's different to, like, they took a swing, like Jerome Robinson went before him. Unfortunately, SGA and Mikal Bridges, couple picks in front, man. If one of those two had fallen, whew. Can you imagine SGA or Mikal Bridges on this Nuggets team right now?
Jeez. Yeah, that's a scary prospect.
Exactly. But it's also just like the draft is a crapshoot. And when you're drafting at that point, the 14th pick, like Troy Brown was after him, Zaire Smith, I mean, who's out of the league already. Like it's just a crapshoot. So they took a swing, that kind of thing. But then you paid him and it's just I feel bad for Nuggets fans. This stinks, man. The MVP season for Jokic last year, like you said, the last year, if you get the ship, none of these injuries just. Like, it's like, well, it stinks, but we got the title. We took the big trade swing in Aaron Gordon, and it all worked out. But I don't know, man. I'm very concerned about the immediate future of the Denver Nuggets. What is Christian Wood's trade value for you?
Not crazy high. I mean, I'm imagining the Rockets would want just sort of their rebuilding bundle of picks and some young guys for Wood. I can see like the Nets swinging for him. I think that makes sense. Maybe like Claxton and then work Wood into their trade exceptions. Yeah, I don't know. It'd kind of be funny, another Nets Rockets trade. I don't know if the Nets can possibly owe the Rockets another pick, but yeah, I don't think it's especially high. His game has seemed to plateau a bit, hasn't emerged as any sort of leader or impactful guy on the Rockets. You know, he should be the best player, really, and he might be just on paper, but nothing's really come to fruition that makes you jump at him. I think he's going to be a sort of, all right, the trade deadline, my should-be-really-good team is sort of muddling around. He's a guy we can take a risk for that's not going to cost us too much. I can't imagine the market for him is going to be huge.
Okay. I could see that too. I don't know what the right trade is because I also just – I don't think he's a guy that swings anything. So I don't know. I get the depth piece for him in Brooklyn. That makes a lot of sense. But a lot of the –
like Portland. Portland,
yeah, Portland actually would be – I like the Portland fit. Yeah. I don't hate that, but I don't know who you're getting at.
One of these higher up teams that just aren't quite as deep as they like, or don't have quite the amount of weapons they like.
Maybe Dallas.
That'd be interesting. Him and KP together, but you're really putting a lot on KP defensively there.
It's true. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Verts, as we wrap up here tonight, your prediction on the Kemba situation, how does it resolve and where does he end up?
That's tough. So does it need resolving? I don't know. If he stays a Nick, like I can see him making his way back into the rotation with like a Derrick Rose injury or a Burks injury or something like that. Man, a trade would be disappointing to say the least, but you know, I buy he's being a professional. He was using good spirits at tonight's game, clapping on his teammates and rooting for him and getting up and active on the bench. And he's a professional guy that's wanted to be on this team for a long time. So Yeah, maybe we just. I'm gonna go the anti-drama route. He stays the third string point guard, just sort of helps out where he can. Mostly doesn't play, and just like a nice veteran to have around for the rest of this Knicks season. That results in, I'm assuming, 20 straight wins and a trip to the NBA Finals.
I still don't think the Knicks are making the playoffs.
Listen, you gotta look at their record and think they've played about as badly as anyone who doesn't like this team mm-hmm. hoped they would.
Right.
So if they can just turn around a couple of these things, they'll be really solid. If they can get that, you know, top five defense back, which I think without Walker in the rotation becomes possible, you're looking at a top five defense and a top 15 offense. So maybe, you know, maybe you have something there, but it's give and take right now. The Knicks seem to love to get up for games against the Nets or the Hawks or the whoever, but then, you know, the Magic roll into town. It's like, oh, geez, you know, what do we do with these guys?
There you go. There you go. Verts, how do the good folks keep up with your work at SMY and everywhere else this week?
Yeah, I've got a little thing on Obi Toppin coming out, some more stuff off the Kemba news, maybe some potential trades. Probably not for John Wall, but still, yeah, I've got some stuff coming out on SNY. Follow me on Twitter, @_Verts. Chase, thanks for having me on, man.
Thanks for being here, man. Late after the game, making it happen, doing it for the pod. Verts, big CT podcast guy.
Always. Love the CT pod.
All right. Well, I will talk to you soon, my good friend. I appreciate it. Verts, talk to you soon, buddy.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.